who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's May.
Good evening. Good evening. It's May Bressel in Carmel, California. It's October 26, 1980, and it's tape number 464, for those of you that receive the tape cassette or play this on other radio stations. Before I get in the middle of the program, I want to remind you again that if you write to me at Post Office Box 22511, Carmel, California, 93923, and send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, I'll send you a bibliography of the program each week or selected weeks if you want. I have printed sheets that go out with the tapes by subscription, and if you want those, people locally or in Santa Cruz or Salinas, you can write to me, and I'll send you the bibliography and references of the material that I'm talking about on each program. This evening, I have just a few articles to refer to, and mostly I want to make some comments philosophically and ideas that I have about the election. 9 days from tomorrow is the next election for the President of the United States, and the program that I started years ago on KLRB 9 years ago, Dialogue Conspiracy, that became World Watchers, titled World Watchers later, has really to do with the electoral process. That is the subject that I have studied extensively, specifically the way candidates are chosen through murder, attempted murder, blackmail, and how they move into power on the basis of people that were murdered before them, and those murders haven't been investigated. I'm not going to pass great words of wisdom on either of the candidates, Ronald Reagan or Jimmy Carter, because I sincerely believe that each of those candidates is equally bad. And I have strong feelings now, I didn't have up till this week, about who I will be voting for. These tapes are numbered and dated and are preserved for all time, I hope, by some people. They put them away. And the subjects I talk on this program, that I talk about, are not momentary, such as particular quotations of Richard Nixon when he was in office, or Ronald Reagan, the candidate now who's governor of California, or Jimmy Carter. I give a few quotations of these men, but the main important thing about the candidates is the way they are used by the Defense Department and the intelligence agency and the news media as a front for something that is supposed to represent the people of the United States, but doesn't really represent their interests at all. We get deeper into debt, higher inflation, problems with cost of housing, food, transportation, health. Everything we need is being taken away from us, clean air, food without poisons, and so forth. The problems are endless, and they get worse all the time, whether it is a Republican or a Democrat in office, because those people that are selected for us by the process of earlier murders that put them into office do not care about us as people. They care about corporations or power or the power to make World War III, and we are expendable whether we are Democrats or Republicans. Jimmy Carter's had 4 years as a Democrat, and the fascism that rolled along after Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford has been continuous. Nothing much has changed. The names of the presidents and their parties go back and forth, but what they do affects our lives forever, and what they do is consistently bad and continuously leading us to World War III. What I talk about on these programs crosses party lines. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I try to look at the candidates and the strength they have and the weakness they have. And in this case, both of them are so closely linked to the assassination teams working in Washington, D.C. and around the world that there isn't a hair's breadth difference between them. We worry about Republicans being in office. The Democrats worry. John Kennedy was murdered when Democrats were in office. A Democratic president, Lyndon Johnson, was accused by many people of murdering the president whose office he took. Democrats didn't investigate the murder. A Democratic Attorney General, Robert Kennedy, the brother of the dead president, didn't move his finger. A Democratic Senator, Edward Kennedy, didn't do a bit to help the people investigate who killed his brother Robert or his brother John. We had what we called a liberal Chief Justice of the Supreme Court who headed the Warren Commission. He was selected for political office by Murray Chotiner of organized crime. Earl Warren worked with Tom Dewey in New York and was closely associated with the crime syndicate. And Earl Warren's career began when he was allegedly a suspect in the unsolved murder of his own father in Bakersfield. So that was your liberal Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and I fail to see any difference between a pseudo-fascist such as Warren Burger and an Earl Warren with his mistaken image of being liberal. My specialty and concern is the use of murder, as I say, political assassination, that controls our country. That every 4 years election year and individually, whether they're single murders or whether they're mass murders, and all of those are taking place continuously. How do these 1980 candidates, Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter, line up? As I said, there isn't a bit of difference between them. They both have close links to the Ku Klux Klan, to the Nazi Party, the young American Nazis in this country, to German Nazis who are still alive from World War II. They use Gestapo tactics that were taught to our Central Intelligence Agency and Defense Department by Hitler's agents. They're both heavily linked to organized crime, and they're up to their knees with agents who support them, who are heavily involved in narcotic traffic all over the world. And with narcotic traffic goes burglaries and robberies and keeps us off the streets at night and mugging. And the profits from heroin and cocaine and hashish go into the pockets of the politicians. And then we get more police on the streets, and the police get paid off, and there's a vicious cycle, and the narcotic traffic continues. In terms of assassinations, Ronald Reagan has been funded by people, teams in Texas, Florida, Georgia, that were involved in the murder of John Kennedy, linked to the H.L. Hunt, John Connolly, Leon Jaworski, Clint Murchison, the John Birch Society, the radical right that were behind the murders of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King, are behind Ronald Reagan right now. And when he was on the Rockefeller Commission in 1975 to investigate CIA activities within the United States, which included the political assassinations, he covered that up completely. Jimmy Carter works with terrorists. He sends his brother Billy and Mr. Brzezinski to George Habash over with the PLO and with Carlos in Tripoli and with Gaddafi and the most violent anti-Semitic terrorists that are bombing, killing, maiming all over the world from London, United States, South Africa, Middle East. The links of the Carter family are endless and are turning up more every day in the newspaper with investigations that will maybe open after the elections, but are being the lid is put on them right now. And Jimmy Carter in Georgia is linked to gun running, organized crime, the CIA, the Middle East connections to South Africa, Asia, and mass murderers. His headquarters in Georgia and his family and his agents today are heavily associated with people like Robert Vesco, who also works with Ronald Reagan's team. I keep saying Nick's with Ronald Reagan's team. And there isn't a hairbreadth difference between Vesco working with Carter's or Vesco working with Reagan. I really don't see any difference. There were mass murders in Germany, studying history, at the end of World War I that are important. A friend of mine loaned me some pages of a book that she had, and we'll have to locate a used bookstore, some quotations from a book by Otto Frederick called Before the Deluge, A Portrait of Berlin in the 1920s. This is a book about murders in Germany before Adolf Hitler came into power. There was a period from 1920 to 1933 where there were continuous murders in Germany, political murders, to make way for Adolf Hitler. So you can't blame Adolf Hitler for everything that happened bad in Europe after World War II. He wasn't in power those 13 years when these murders were taking place. Some people were maimed and blown up. Other people were beaten to death. Most of the victims were liberal. Many of them were Jews. And there was a knowledge among these people, according to this book, that a general knowledge that the bureaucrats in the police department and the judiciary had very little interest in punishing these assassins. This was verified by another book by Seymour Melman that came out on the assassinations in Germany. And Emil J. Gumbel printed part of this book, 4 Years of Political Murder, in 1922. This is another book that's hard to get, in which Gumbel talks about 354 political murders committed by the right wing in Germany in this 13-year period. Particularly not in a broad period, just 4 years after the war, from 1918 to 1922. 22 of those murders were committed by the left-wing group out of 354. And of the 22 murders of the left-wing, 17 got heavy sentences and 10 were executed. Of the 326 remaining done by the right-wing, they got 4 months in jail for 326 murders. The sentence was 4 months in jail. And the book Before the Deluge confirms the book 4 Years of Political Murder in Germany. And this Otto Frederick makes comparisons to the Kennedy assassination in his book, that they had the same problem in Germany when one of the leaders in Germany was murdered. A man named Walter Rathenau was murdered, a public servant who worked in Germany, and he was murdered in 1922. And they describe his death and the effect that the murder had in 1922, that when this foreign minister was killed by a group called the Free Group in Germany, it brought on a horror that was similar, this author says, to the death of John Kennedy in the United States. And he says that when Walter Rathenau was assassinated, it was the beginning of the end of German Jewry. This was in 1922. The handwriting was on the wall for what would happen after 1933. So the intellectual Jew, the university people, the Gentile historians, the politicians, all were silent while these continuous murders of political people took place. And they listed in this book the story of before the deluge, different murders, Karl Liebknecht and Rosa Luxemburg, and another man, Matthias Erzberger, the finance minister. He was the man who signed the armistice at the end of World War I. He was shot in a forest somewhere. And Woodrow Wilson, who went for the Versailles Treaty, was poisoned. And there are documents that I've had on previous tapes and broadcasts to the question, should we kill him instantly or let him die slowly? And Woodrow Wilson was poisoned and died slowly when he returned home to the United States. From the moment the Versailles Treaty was signed, there was an intent by a group of people to start a continuous murder of people who wanted to coexist with the Soviet Union or have peace. This group was hell-bent on having war. In another book I have on this subject, they describe these men that killed Rathenau as the men whom war will never let go, who always will have war in their blood. This is a book, The Order of the Death's Head, by Heinz Hohn, published in 1970. So the people that killed Walter Rathenau formed the SS with Himmler. From that time on, in 1922, they were already organizing. But where were the people, and what did they expect would happen to them? And the same question comes about now after the death of John Kennedy. Where are the people that should have spoken up about all the evidence of a conspiracy? And has that silence been indicative of the power that the government has to do other murders and get away with it? And we are going someday to have to pay our dues for turning our back on the perfectly obvious fact that hundreds of people have been murdered in this country for political reasons, and if we had time, I'd read off some of the names, and maybe I will in a few minutes. There is no candidate in 1980 who speaks about peace. That is a dirty word. There's no candidate who wants to coexist and trade with all countries. They want to arm China to fight Russia, arm the Middle East to fight each other. These candidates are simply for selling weapons to whoever wants to buy them and hoping they don't hit us but just wipe out each other. It won't work that way any more than it did selling scrap metal to Japan for years before Pearl Harbor came down. I'm not pessimistic about the condition of the United States and what's taking place for a simple reason. I accept the situation for the world as it is. I try to change it if I can, but I refuse to get frustrated if people are apathetic or opportunistic, trying to take advantage of what's good and not making effort to make any change. If I work myself to the grind and expected a reasonable number of people to wake up and take arms, and they didn't, I'd be disappointed. But if I don't expect that to happen, if I know that reasonable people are very few, that you can just count on a few fingers, then I don't expect anything and nothing much from the victims, the future victims. I'm not expecting them to react any differently than they did in Germany or Italy or France or any other country. Victims don't know they're victims until they're about to die or at the moment of death. I do my work. I try to lay down certain facts that are based upon history to show where we're going. And hopefully, when things get really rough and tough, you might remember some of the things I said and be able to make a judgment based on other than emotion or laziness, and remember that whatever comes down had a beginning and an end, that it didn't just happen. You don't just wake up and have acid rain or fallout from bombs from China or radiation or sterilization. You have it because people brought in scientists to reap the benefit and profit from that invention, knowing that your body will have those diseases, and they don't care about you. And so long as you allow the scientists to do the genetic research today, the DNA, the test tube processes of creating super races and high IQs and so forth, you're going to have to live with the consequence of the complacency. Now, the Constitution of the United States was written for reasonable or normal conditions, but there was no provision in the Constitution, and I reread it again this week to check that out, for when one president succeeds another and there's a suspicion that the vice president had the president murdered. There should have been a clause that in the case of an election when a president is murdered and the man who was the vice president under him has links or is suspect to that murder, that the election should be put off until the investigation takes place of the assassins and the vice president who would succeed the man who was killed. Our Constitution says the president must be a natural-born citizen, 35 years of age, 14 years residence in the United States. But it also says something interesting, too. It says, Congress may by law provide the case of the president and vice president, declaring what officer shall act as president and as such officer shall act accordingly until the disability be removed or a president be elected. In the case that a president is removed from office, Congress shall act accordingly about the disability until a president is elected. Now, it seems to me that Congress should take its time when a president is murdered or out of office to decide about the qualifications of the vice president. And the way I read the Constitution, it seems that Congress should make the decision. When John Kennedy was murdered in Dallas, Texas at 12:55 Central Time, Lyndon Johnson was made president at 2:38 Central Time. So 2 hours and 20 minutes after the murder of John Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson was sworn into office by Sarah Jane Hughes, a friend of his, Sarah Hughes, of the Central Intelligence Agency, a CIA woman and a judge who's still presiding in Texas. And within 2 hours, Lyndon Johnson had himself made president of the United States. After that, Gerald Ford was put on the Warren Commission by Richard Nixon, and Richard Nixon had lost the presidency to John Kennedy in 1960. I follow the past assassinations, and I believe sincerely that the election process has been a fraud since 1960. You go up and you put an X after two names that they selected for you, or one of those independents that's a sure loser. The election should have been stopped in 1964, or certainly the oath of office of Lyndon Johnson may be put off and another president appointed, given the circumstances that Lyndon Johnson came from Texas and worked so closely with the Dallas law enforcement, the government, the group that was to investigate the murder. No person of the CIA should have handled the evidence, and they handled all of it, because John Kennedy had kicked Allen Dulles out of the CIA because there was a hidden government behind his back. Law officers from around the world should have been able to examine the bullets, the autopsy X-rays, the clothing of John Kennedy, of John Connally, instead of it being locked up or sent to the dry cleaners or destroyed. And there should have been an investigation of Jack Ruby and his connections to organized crime, or Richard Nixon, or the House Internal Security Committee, or the employment of Lee Harvey Oswald at Riley Coffee Company, a conduit of Mullen Associates in Washington, D.C., and the links of Carlos Marcellus, an organized crime figure with connections to Jack Ruby in Las Vegas and Mo Dalitz and Robert Vesco and the assassination teams. No president should have taken office or have been elected in 1964 without finding out how the man who preceded him was murdered. Again, in 1968, Richard Nixon shouldn't have been allowed to run for president of the United States until all the evidence of how Senator Robert Kennedy was murdered in the Ambassador Hotel was examined, to find out without any doubt whether Nixon and his Right House plumbers and his dirty team and the CIA had killed his opponent in order not to have this fair election. They should have gone into the Ambassador Hotel and counted the bullets. There were 10 the police and FBI had, and Sirhan's gun shoots 8. They should have questioned Mr. Shine, who owns the Ambassador Hotel. He worked with McCarthy and Roy Cohn in the House Un-American Activities during the Big Red Scare. He was part of the team that escalated Richard Nixon's prominence, David Shine. They should have gone into the weapon that Sirhan had, who he was with the days before he ended up in the Ambassador Hotel, his state of mind when he was under hypnosis, the links of the Sirhan family in Pasadena to the Central Intelligence Agency Palestine. They should have found out who brought over the Sirhan family and the conduit of the Greek Orthodox Church. There shouldn't have been an election in 1968 until we found out if one of the two candidates who won the primary victory in June of 1968 was murdered in order to assure Richard Nixon's nomination for President of the United States. Before the 1968 elections, they should have gone into Martin Luther King's murder that took place in April of 1968. James Earl Ray called a CIA attorney from London, Mr. Haynes, when he was picked up there. He gave interviews that murder of Martin Luther King had to happen during an election year. What followed were riots that catapulted Spiro Agnew, who had links to the Nazis in Greece, who was part of the military junta that put Nazis back in power in 1967 in Greece. Tom Pappas and the CIA and the Akros and the oil people. Agnew wasn't qualified to represent the people of the United States. His combined organized crime and CIA and Greek fascist connections and the shenanigans that went on in Maryland when he was the governor, the elections should have been called off. There's nothing in the Constitution that provided for this kind of chicanery that we have lived with and put up with. And the point is that in Germany, they lived with that from 1918 to 1933 when Hitler came in. And when they got Hitler, they got more than they bargained for, but their lethargy brought Hitler. Those 326 deaths of the left made Hitler possible. There was no one to speak up for the people. And that's what happened in this country. In 1969, Tony Laskowitz of the Watergate fame was up at Chappaquiddick. E. Howard Hunt was working on Chappaquiddick. Nixon was going to run against Ted Kennedy in 1972. The truth about how Ted Kennedy got to the island, who he called, how he got back, is all a lie. The Chappaquiddick witnesses were never called before a court. Mary Jo Kopechne never deserved an autopsy. There was blood on her blouse, and they never found out how it got there. The damage on the car wasn't consistent with the way it fell in the water. All that happened at Chappaquiddick was that every person in the cottage was flown away. There was a wall of silence over discrepancies and lies. Nixon's plumbers were up to their ears in the murder of Mary Jo Kopechne. It all began to come out at the time of Watergate and was hushed up like the Otto John case in Germany. And the whole purpose was to keep Ted Kennedy from running in 1972. And there never should have been an election in 1972 after the Watergate entries in June and the Chappaquiddick affair until every question about who murdered Mary Jo surfaced to find out if the Republicans had murdered Mary Jo Kopechne to make sure that Richard Nixon would be reelected. Now, this isn't a Republican problem that Richard Nixon won because Robert Kennedy was dead or that Richard Nixon won because Ted Kennedy was embarrassed and washed out or wasn't even in the car. The true story of Chappaquiddick never came out. That isn't a Republican problem. They can pull those shenanigans, just as the Germans pulled their 326 murders or more in Germany prior to Adolf Hitler. The problem is with the lazy Democrats. They can't get off their behinds and even ask what happens to their fallen leaders or their candidates. And half of them belong to the intelligence community. And when the deaths take place, they scramble like mad. People like Burke Marshall and Ramsey Clark and Mr. Kunstler and the so-called left or Mark Lane. There is no left. There's no left lawyers. There's a bunch of cowards that run and publish maybe one or two books and leave it go at that and betray their very friends right down the line. The election should have been stopped, as I say, at the time of Watergate and when Nixon was in power. He won the election in spite of all the damage or the evidence that the Watergate went all the way to the White House. And when Richard Nixon went out of office, he appointed Gerald Ford, again, not qualified to be president of the United States, a member of the Warren Commission who covered up the assassination of John Kennedy, and then becomes president of the United States on the condition Nixon says, I'll make you the president of the United States, and you promise that I can't be prosecuted for any further offenses. So Gerald Ford makes that deal, and you call that a presidency. Gerald Ford was on the Meet the Press or one of the shows last week as if he were a distinguished elder statesman talking about my presidency. He was elected to nothing. He's represented the CIA and the Defense Department. He's lied through his teeth about Lee Harvey Oswald and the assassination of Kennedy and all other intelligence operations. He absolves Richard Nixon of any crimes when he had so many crimes on the book, including the plane crash of Dorothy Hunt, the death of Murray Chotiner. There were many, many Watergate deaths that just flowed one after the other. Lou Russell and many witnesses to the Watergate story, Beverly Kay in the White House, who typed up the 18-minute tape and so forth, or had access to it. The deaths were countless. And Gerald Ford just steps right in, and Nixon goes to his beach home and sells it at a big profit and ends up a next-door neighbor to David Rockefeller right in Manhattan, as cozy as he can be. And the 1980 election rolls around, and they had a convention, the Republicans, and not a word about how Nelson Rockefeller was deep sixth. Would Ronald Reagan be candidate if Rockefeller were alive today? Rockefeller would certainly bring out some issues. I believe not that he was perfect, but he conveniently was deep sixth before he was a thorn in Reagan's side. This is the end. I'll stop now so we can turn the tape over. This is 30 minutes of election murders and conspiracies and why I have little faith in the system. We'll continue in another moment. This is Mae Bressel in Carmel.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Bressel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.